Golf Today.
How about Colt McCoy? Great college player for the University of Texas, four-year starter for the Longhorns under head coach Mack Brown. Countless awards. His number 12 retired by Texas back in 2010. Same year, selected in the third round of the NFL draft by the Cleveland Browns. Go on to play for the Niners, Commanders, Giants, and Cards as well. A little over a year ago, McCoy announced his retirement from the NFL, enjoys time on the golf course, real estate. Next week, he'll be participating in the Gladney Cup at Riviera out in Los Angeles, an event held September 27th through the 29th, and champions the mission and history of the Gladney Center for Adoption. For more than 137 years, Gladney has been serving families and creating bright futures through adoption. In the 25-year history of the Gladney Cup, more than $13 million has been raised in support of the Gladney Center for Adoption. And great to have Colt McCoy with us on this Monday to talk about this special event. First of all, Colt, how'd you get involved in the Gladney Cup?
Yeah, great question. You know, my wife and my family and I moved back to Fort Worth, to Texas, when I retired, moved back to Texas. And my wife and I have always had a heart for ending the child welfare crisis in America, and that's foster kids and adoption. And when we moved back to Fort Worth, we got familiar with the Gladney Home specifically. And, you know, there are over 4,000 children in the Texas foster care system that are available for adoption. And, you know, Gladney's why is that every child deserves a loving and caring family. And there's a lot of work to do. And every year they host a tournament, Gladney Cup, which allows them to kind of globally share their vision with people that might not have otherwise been able to reach. And so it's a really cool opportunity for my wife and I to sort of get involved.
It's a great cause to get behind, Colt. How often do you actually put your game on display in events like this in the way you're going to do at Riviera?
Yeah, not a lot. I've actually never played Riviera before. You know, now that I'm in retirement, I did tear my elbow up, which is why I had to retire from the NFL. But I love to play golf. Played a bunch of golf throughout my life. I was actually on my high school golf team. And so my game's getting stronger. You know, coming off an elbow injury, it's always hard to trust it when you're out there. But I am excited about this. I'm excited about the tournament. It's a great group of friends and folks here in my community. And I'm looking forward to sharing that with everybody who's going to be at this tournament.
Well, you went to college at one of not just a great football school, but a great golf school with alums that include Ben Crenshaw, Tom Kite, Eamon's great buddy, Brandel Chamblee. You've got Justin Leonard, Jordan Spieth, the world number one Scottie Scheffler. How much do you interact with any of those gentlemen?
Yeah, you know what? Texas is a football school, but they're also a golf school. I mean, are you kidding me with those names? Scottie Scheffler's on fire. Jordan Spieth's a great friend. I used to work out in the same gym as Tom Kite. I love listening to his stories of his time. Crenshaw's a great friend, has a beautiful course right outside of Austin. And so the alumni, the guys who went to Texas, that group is strong. And certainly Texas golf is in a great place and has a tradition and history of so many incredible players.
When you find yourself around guys like that a lot, Colt, and then you move into this competitive environment, and you are competitive by nature, obviously. It's always been your career. Is your goal at Riviera results-based, or are you just trying not to embarrass yourself like the rest of us?
Probably a little of both. It's hard to not be a competitor. You can't just turn that on and off. I mean, I'm going to compete when I play Uno with my kids at the house, right? But I also know that I'm a little handicapped with a golf ball. I can throw a football, but my game is in good shape. It's coming along. I've got a lot of work to do, but it will be a ton of fun. I've never played at Riviera. You know, being able to represent Gladney and help them raise some money for all the wonderful work that they're doing here in Texas, that's certainly a privilege for me.
Colt, famously, Jake Delhomme gets hurt. Seneca Wallace gets hurt. You're now the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. You stand in front of the team about to face the Steelers. You say, don't worry, guys. We're going to be all right. I know that because I covered you when I was at Sports Illustrated. The Europeans are putting on VR headsets trying to deal with the crowd noise at Bethpage Black. How did you prepare for a tough road game to block out the noise?
Oh, I'm telling you, I don't know if it'll be as loud as some of these NFL stadiums. It might be. This is going to get competitive. We used to practice with crowd noise and loud music indoors as loud as it could be. And by the time you're done with practice, you're like, can somebody just whisper to me? I don't have a voice anymore. This is crazy. But silent counts, you know, signals, all the things that you really need to have when you go on the road in loud environments, you got to practice that. And I think the Europeans are in for a tough one.
I think you might be right, Colt. It's great to visit with you. Have fun out in Los Angeles for a great cause. And thanks for spending time with us on this Monday.
You bet, you guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Colt McCoy. Golf Today, back after this. We're back on Golf Today. Ryder Cup at Bethpage Black quickly approaching. Located on Long Island, Bethpage is a mecca for public golf, featuring 5 18-hole regulation golf courses, including the famed Black Course. Speaking of municipal golf, we'd like to shine a light on National Links Trust, a nonprofit organization dedicated to positively impacting our community and changing lives through affordable and accessible municipal golf. Our vision is to be the leading advocate and resource for municipal golf across the United States. So with more, we are pleased to welcome in Damian Cosby, Executive Director of the National Links Trust. Great to see you, my friend. I'm curious, as we sit in 2025, what do you see as the role of municipal golf in the United States of America?
Hey, guys, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me, and Damon, great to see you again. You know, I think the role for municipal golf is going to continue to be an important role. It's, you know, it's ways for new people to the game, to enter the game. It's the usually the most affordable, the most accessible, the most relaxed way to for somebody to enter the game. So I think municipal golf plays a pivotal role in the game of golf. And you know, I said this years ago when we first met, that municipal golf, the stakeholders are truly the stewards of the game to make sure it's around 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now.
What are some of the major projects and agenda items for the National Links Trust right now, Damian?
Yeah, you know, at our core, you know, we are a community-based organization. So some of the things we're doing currently are, you know, a lot of community-based programming. You know, we open up our golf facilities and our instructors to events like Free Lesson Friday that are sponsored by our friends at Chevron, where we invite everyone in the community, whether you know the game, have played the game, have left the game, want to play more, bring them out to our facilities and host them and help them with their golf games. We offer programs like our Jack Vardaman Workforce Development Program that are taking young people in the community, teaching them job and life skills, and more importantly, giving them access to college scholarships through our friends, through our Jack Vardaman Workforce Development Scholarship Program and our Junior Caddy Program that we run with our friends at WGA and the Evans Scholars. And then, you know, our big projects are the 3 renovation projects of the 3 historical properties in Washington, D.C., our Rock Creek property, which is original design by William Flynn, our Langston Golf Course, which I personally believe is home to black golf in America, and then our East Potomac Golf Links, originally designed by Walter Travis. So, you know, we have 3 of the best golf course architects in the world lending their time and efforts and their skills, their great skills to these efforts. The Rock Creek location is going to be redesigned by Gil Hance. Tom Doak is going to be working at East Potomac, and Bo Welling is going to be doing the work at Langston. So we're really, really excited about all 3 of those properties. And I think when we're done, I think when we're complete, we're going to set the example for what affordable, accessible, and sustainable municipal golf looks like. And we're really excited about the future.
You know, Damian, speaking of the future, years ago you said something that stuck with me. You said that the junior golfer is just as important as the 50-year-old CEO. What did you mean by that?
It's interesting you remember that. You know, I'm a PGA professional. I spent most of my career in the municipal space, and, you know, I've worked at a lot of different facilities, and revenue tended to be the driving factor. And I've said that statement in times I've spoke, but I've also said that to boards and elected officials who I reported to. But to be, or as I mentioned, to be around and make sure this game is around for a long time, we have to invest in young golfers. And that means, you know, not limiting when golfers can play. I totally understand that revenue is important. But a young golfer who's just stepping foot on a municipal golf course should feel as welcome as that CEO that plays every Saturday morning. And that's what I mean about creating these wonderful, inviting spaces for all parts of the community. And junior golfers should be part of that. They should feel as welcome and shouldn't feel like because they're a junior golfer, the sheen is less than.
Damien, the Ryder Cup is being played next week on a municipal golf course. Yeah. And on one hand, it's easy to say, OK, well, this is an opportunity to show how important municipal golf is. On the other hand, it is a very corporatized event and it is a revenue driver, and not least in the ticket pricing. Is it also a missed opportunity in terms of showing or sending a message about accessibility and affordability?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a missed opportunity. Maybe there's a bit of a mixed message there. You know, I think, you know, with Bethpage's rates for New York residents, that does show an affordability component. But yes, on the flip side, you know, ticket prices, and again, I mentioned I'm a PGA member. I understand this is a revenue generator for the PGA of America. But at the local level, again, municipalities are leading that affordability, accessibility effort. Like what we're doing in D.C., our rates for our golf courses are so far below what market rates are. And even post-renovation, we intend to keep them that way. We want to make sure everybody in the community has access to our facilities. And again, we want to be as welcoming as we can.
On that note, Damien, you once said that golf is a sport with a lot of no's and you want to see more yeses in golf. Are you seeing more yeses? Are you seeing the barriers come down? Are you seeing some rules that have been around for decades relaxed, as it were?
Yeah, I think so. You know, you've been on golf courses and you start to see some music played and, you know, people wearing hoodies, me included. Just the way golfers now dress is certainly different than it was 20 years ago. So I think, holding to a lot of our traditions in the game, we're allowing people to express themselves a bit more on the golf course, and I think that's a great thing. You look at I'm not sure if you gentlemen have played the park, but you look at the vibe at the park. Another Gil Hanse design, wonderful golf course, but it's so relaxed, it's so laid back, and it is a really, really inviting atmosphere, and that's exactly what we're going to do in Washington, D.C.
Damien's getting a lot of blood, sweat, and tears for this game that you love. It's great to visit with you today, and thanks so much for your time.
Likewise, guys. Really appreciate being with you. Thank you.
Well, one of the more intriguing questions next week at the Ryder Cup is who Captain Keegan Bradley pairs with this guy. Bryson DeChambeau isn't easily married to any of the other guys on this team. Coming up in our roundtable, Todd Lewis has one idea of who we might see with Bryson.
With more on the world number one, it's time now for a Golf Today Roundtable. We welcome our own Todd Lewis and Rex Hoggard. Great to see you, gentlemen. I'm curious, Todd, I mean, Scotty Scheffler wins. That's what he does. But do you see some realized momentum that he can take from Napa to the Ryder Cup that he doesn't already have?
I wouldn't say that he doesn't already have. He's just continuing that momentum. I mean, another great win for him. First time playing this tournament, first time winning ever in California. I mean, you make these comparisons to Tiger Woods, and, you know, some of them are real. Some of them, you know, there's time will tell. But one thing that is not measured that I will tell you, and I'm sure Rex will tell you too, he's out there on the PGA Tour with me, is that when Scottie Scheffler shows up on the final day on the first page of the leaderboard, those above him, well, they get nervous. There is an intimidation factor. And when a player like Ben Griffin is trying to win a tournament on the final day, he's wrestling with a lot of internal demons, but he's also wrestling with that demon right there holding the trophy when he starts going north on the leaderboard, because they know he's not going to make a mistake. And because of that, they go into a mode of fear of not failing. They try not to make the mistake, and consciously or subconsciously, sometimes they do make that mistake, as we saw Ben Griffin yesterday on the final hole, not being able to convert that birdie to go into a playoff. So Scottie Scheffler is a force, and I would say a dominant force, and he is in the psyche of those who are in the field against him.
Rex, is it possible that this tune-up that Keegan Bradley organized for all of his guys, bar couple, to show up in Napa, has both a pro and a con attached to it. Scotty has momentum and confidence that he didn't actually need. But Ben Griffin, on the other hand, he has a little scar tissue from what happened yesterday. Is it possible that, you know, obviously he's playing well to put himself in that position, but is there a little negative for Ben Griffin leaving in the way he left?
I did like Ben Griffin's response on Sunday after he'd gotten beat by Scottie Scheffler, saying that he's going to be glad in 2 weeks when you're on my team and I don't have to play against you anymore. That certainly speaks volumes when you hear players say something like that. I don't know how much of a negative impact it's going to have. And I was in Napa last week, and a couple of the players were asked, are there any negatives to this quote-unquote scouting trip, coming out, playing the Pro Core Championship, knocking off some rust, whatever it is you want to call it. And I saw six or seven players struggle to try to come up with some sort of negative. Sure, Ben Griffin is probably kicking himself a little bit, specifically about the finish. That's kind of out of character for what we've seen out of Ben this year. But you also have to put it in context, the thing that Todd Lewis just pointed out. He's a dominant force. What he's done, not just this year on the PGA Tour, but the last few years. I'm not saying it's ever easy to lose, but if you're going to lose, losing to Scottie Scheffler in full flight's probably not that bad of a thing.
T. Lou, you know, Keegan Bradley has said that Bryson DeChambeau has gone above and beyond, you know, meeting the team, reaching out, even though he's not a member of the PGA Tour. But now we're getting down to brass tacks. Bryson has to be grouped, has to be paired with somebody. What is Keegan going to do?
Well, that's a good question. And I look at the golf ball that Bryson DeChambeau uses is a big thing. The golf ball is one of the five criteria that the players were selected by the captain and the vice captain. They want to have kind of a communal golf ball, especially obviously in foursome play or alternate shot. It's going to be challenging for Keegan to match up somebody with Bryson DeChambeau because of the different golf ball he uses that is so unique to his swing speed and one that he has helped develop. He will have to make an adjustment, or his partner will have to make an adjustment if he plays alternate shot or foursome. However, I do think he'll be a weapon in four ball. And because of that, I actually see him and Scottie Scheffler pairing together. I think I wouldn't be surprised if that happens in better ball, because first off, Bryson's game, he's an aggressive player by nature. He can take some risks, go at big par fives and two. And then you've got the steadiest player on the planet, Scottie Scheffler, hitting fairways and greens. In case that risk doesn't pay off into a reward, you've got Scheffler generally on the green in four ball action, probably putting for birdie every hole. So I would not be surprised to see them two play together in four ball action. They both live in the Dallas area. They have played against each other and with each other before. They know each other's game. So I think that would be an intriguing pairing.
Rex, there's a reconnaissance mission going on today and tomorrow. The European team flew over last night on a charter from London. They even gave Paul McGinley a ride over, which is nice of them to save Paul the airfare from back of the plane on Virgin Atlantic for that one. But how important is the next couple of days for the Europeans, just in terms of acclimating to what they're actually going to see, at least in terms of the golf course? I guess they're using virtual reality headphones to acclimate to what they think they're going to get in real time.
I was hoping you were going to ask me the virtual reality headphones question, because I recently went to a New York Yankees game, and I can't imagine any AI that can come up what came out of some of those fans' mouths. And I think it's going to be the same thing at Bethpage Black. I would be very entertained to see exactly what Donald piped into that virtual reality headset. I will say I spoke with some team members from Team Europe about the idea of this scouting trip, and this really goes back to Rome 2 years ago. They made a scouting trip. That one came in between the Irish Open and the BMW PGA, which is in London. They snuck over to Italy and played a round or two of golf, just trying to get acclimated with the golf course, spend more time around each other. And we know Luke Donald is a brilliant captain, and that's why he leveraged that. But when you talk to the folks in Team Europe about it, that was one of the things they took away from the Ryder Cup 4 years ago at Whistling Straits, the idea that they didn't feel like they were prepared. They didn't feel like they showed up at the golf course and they knew enough. They felt like they were a little overwhelmed. I think it's just another example of how Europe is so proactive when it comes to, if something is wrong, they're so good at fixing it.
T. Lou, what do you think on that same note, considering the season these Europeans have had? Rory, Tommy Fleetwood, you think about Bob McIntyre, Justin Rose, Luke Donald is back for a second captaincy. Do you see the Europeans having struck on a winning formula?
Let me be very clear about this. The European team is coming to Bethpage with a lot of confidence, and they don't have many questions to answer. They have 11 of their 12 coming back that dominated, and they did dominate in Rome. They are making this a business trip. You know, often you hear teams, when they go on the road in a hostile environment, that this is a business trip. They are not going to be bothered by distractions. They are focused and they are deep. They are going to be a challenging, challenging team to take down for the United States squad. But they have confidence in Luke Donald. They have a unity that they're bringing from Rome here. They, in my opinion, they should be the favorites to win, even though they're playing on away soil.
You can also make that argument, Todd, on the fact that one of their backroom guys has won more in the last 3 weeks than any of the 24 guys who are on the team. I'm curious, Todd, if you think it's a more difficult challenge for Luke Donald in the sense that he had a very successful playbook in Rome. He has genetically the exact same team as he had in Rome. Does he just run the same playbook again, knowing that it's successful? Or how much does he actually have to adjust?
No, I think he's going to have to adjust because the players' games have adjusted since the last 2 years. You know, some guys may not be as hot as they were 2 years ago. I mean, look at Ludvig Åberg. He's been okay this season, although he has been playing well as of late. But he was a pretty bright star for the European team in Rome. So he's maybe a different player than he was 2 years ago. But I think he has a good foundation to build on. All he has to do is look back at what happened in Rome and then adjust to how the players are playing. But yeah, you know, they have a very good formula that they have figured out, and they are going to be challenging to beat.
Rex, there are so many unknowns going into this Ryder Cup, but we both have covered, all of us have covered major championships at Bethpage Black. We don't know how the crowd is going to react. We know how they've reacted in the past in major championships and in playoff events. How much are you expecting the crowd to be a factor and maybe even a part of the story when all is said and done come Sunday evening?
I don't think it's an overstatement to say we've never experienced what's going to happen at Bethpage in golf before. I think the idea we're going to get the good, it's going to be especially for the home team. If the U.S. gets off to a good start, I can imagine the crowd will create a wave that the U.S. players will be able to ride very well. The second things go poorly, though, I would expect the crowd to turn on them, and I can only imagine what the Europeans need to brace for. The idea that these are not golf fans. These are going to be sports fans, and I think you and I both have been to Bethpage enough that we know there's going to be things that are going to be said that professional golfers aren't going to be used to be hearing. I will say that while I was in Napa last week, I spoke with the rookies because they're the ones that will be making the first start. And not only are you making your first start in the Ryder Cup, but you're doing it at Bethpage. And I spoke with the vice captains really along the lines of what are you telling them to expect? And Webb Simpson probably gave me the best answer when he told me that, look, it's going to be overwhelming. You just need to embrace it. Don't try to fight it. It's the idea of what Rory finally came around to at the Masters, that I'm just going to embrace all of this. I'm going to embrace the good and the bad and the loud and the ugly of it, because if you try to shield it out, if you try to pretend like it's not there, you're going to get overrun.
Getting off the Ryder Cup for a moment, Rex, one of the guys you were watching out in Napa, Jackson Coivin, had another great week. He says he's going back to Auburn, but Trevor Immelman posted on social media last night that Jackson should just make the jump now and turn pro. Do you see any chance that that happens, or would it actually take a victory on the PGA Tour for him to make that kind of leap now?
I think it would probably take a victory, and this is the reason I say it. We had a similar conversation, I'm sure all of us did, when Nick Dunlap won the American Express, and the idea that he sort of flirted with the idea that maybe he defers that exemption onto the PGA Tour for a year and he was going to go back to college. I fought against that. I thought it was ridiculous. Not only are you getting a tour card out of college, but you're getting a PGA Tour A card, which means you're playing the signature events. You're not getting a PGA Tour B card. You needed to take the maximum advantage of that. This is a little bit different, unless he gets that victory that you just referred to. And it really sounds like when you hear Jackson talk about him wanting to go back to college, this is such a personal decision. And it's such a decision that requires so much input from the people around you that you trust, that my guess is he's already arrived at that. So I would argue that anything short of a victory is probably not worth second guessing yourself.
T. Lou, I can't recall a time when the best players on both the Americans and the Europeans are playing as well as Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy, the alpha dogs for each team. I'm just curious, wide open question, what are you most looking forward to next week on Long Island?
Well, I'm going to follow up what you're talking about. I'm looking forward to the competition. I mean, I think it's going to be intense. I think it's going to come down to be honest, I think it's going to come down to the final few matches on Sunday singles. And that's something we haven't had since Medina in 2012. The Ryder Cup has been decided, you know, pretty early in the Sunday singles matches over the last, few times that they have gotten together. So I'm looking forward to intense, great, hopefully respectful competition. We don't want any more craziness. We've had enough of that between these two teams. But I think it's going to be incredibly intense, and it's going to be a must-watch. This is going to be one of the greatest sporting events of 2025. Not one of the greatest golf events, one of the greatest sporting events, in my opinion.
And next week, we're going to talk about it all again on Live from the Ryder Cup. You both are contributing, and I can't wait. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us on this Monday.
You got it, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Well, there aren't many guys out there with more Ryder Cup experience than Lanny Watkins. 21.5 points he accumulated during the 8 teams he played on. He also captained a 9th team. No better man to preview Bethpage Black. Lanny is coming up next.
All right, folks, right now, let's look now at the Capgemini Ryder Cup Insights featuring a World Golf Hall of Fame member, Lanny Watkins.
Well, Lanny was named the captain of the U.S. team for the 1995 Ryder Cup held upstate New York at Oak Hill, but it is quite a record Lanny Watkins built in the Ryder Cup over the years. 21.5 points. Only Arnold Palmer and Billy Casper have accumulated more, all the way back to 1977. When he made his debut the same year, he won the PGA Championship. And the World Golf Hall of Famer joins us now. Lanny, it's always good to see you. I'm curious how much this captain's job has changed in the 30 years, because Keegan has now an entire support team around him. He's got a team manager in John Wood, all of these vice captains. What did you have back at Oak Hill?
I had my brother. I brought him along as an assistant captain, more to watch the players during practice, because Bobby was still on tour at the time and knew how they were playing. So I got great feedback and honest feedback from Bobby. So that he was a big, big help. I'm not even sure the PGA paid his expenses at that point in time. Then I found as the matches got going, I needed more help. And I actually enlisted Gordon Johnson, who was a pro at Preston Trail, and Dick Harmon, who was the brother of Craig Harmon, who was a pro at Oak Hill at the time, and my teacher as assistant captains. Got him a cart, got him wireless things where they could communicate with me, and basically they helped me a whole lot as the week went on.
Lanny, it's interesting, in this modern era of Ryder Cups, I keep hearing the word camaraderie, you know, the players getting together, wives, dinners, making sure everybody kind of likes each other ahead of time. Was camaraderie a big discussion point across your 8 playings, or was it more about just showing up and playing and getting the job done?
Pretty much showing up and playing, getting the job done, Damon. We, you know, didn't think about it. I'm assuming that today's players have a bigger issue because they're all flying in their own private jets. We didn't have that luxury. So we're probably all flying back in economy together back in the day. So it wasn't quite the way we traveled, but that may have been a difference. But had a lot of different, you know, partners when I played and got along with everybody. And we actually made new friends at Ryder Cup. Some of the guys that we didn't hang out with on tour that made teams, we got to know better, Ryder Cup week. So a lot of my friendships on tour came from playing on the teams and making more friends, you know, during that week.
So much has changed over the years, Lanny, with the Ryder Cup, not least this year. Now the American team's players are being paid. Where do you fall on that issue? Would you like to have been paid at that point? Or is it just a matter of patriotism for you and that the payment doesn't really and shouldn't matter?
I don't think the payment should matter. I mean, I think any of us would have, you know, cut off a limb to play on the Ryder Cup team back when I played. We wanted to play so badly, it never crossed our mind to be paid, at least when I was playing. I don't think any of the pay for, you know, play stuff came along until after I was done playing. But, you know, it was just a massive honor to represent your country. And the money just didn't even enter the equation.
Lanny, you know what it's like to play. You know what it's like to captain. How do you think Keegan Bradley handled the decision-making process, then ultimately decision to captain solely and not play?
I think it was a great decision on Keegan's part. I think he made exactly the right choice. I think Keegan's going to be a fantastic captain. I love his energy, what he brings to it. His personality is perfect personality for a Ryder Cup captain. He's a fighter. He's into it. He takes no crap off anybody. I like that with him a lot. The job is too big to try and play. And also, Keegan's not Scottie Scheffler. I mean, let's get right down to it. And had he been Tiger Woods or Scottie Scheffler, might have been a different deal. But, you know, the separation, as good a player as Keegan is, the amount of separation between him and, say, Sam Burns is not that great, not compared to Scottie Scheffler or Tiger Woods. Those two guys, maybe a different situation.
Keegan had six captain's picks, Lanny. You only had two back then in 1995. What's the right number, or would you just pick the entire team?
That's a great question. I don't know. All the teams, I guess I made it my first one in a way. I was the PGA champion, and the PGA champion was automatic. In fact, when I was on the first tee for the playoff of the PGA, Don Padgett told Gene Littler and myself that whichever one of us won, we were now going to be on the Ryder Cup team, and we'd be knocking Al Geiberger off. So the PGA champion was automatic, and I think stayed that way for a while until the first captain's picks were actually 89. Raymond Floyd had the picks, and ironically, I was the first pick along with Tom Watson in 89. So that was the first time that there were captain's picks. So I don't know. I did it both ways. Captain's picks are tough. I had so many guys to choose from, and only having two spots, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Lanny, Luke Donald gets the job in back-to-back Ryder Cups. What are the advantages or disadvantages you think that Europe will have for bringing back the same voice, even if it was a victory a couple years ago in Rome?
I think it's probably a good idea. I think he's got the experience of winning. I think he has the confidence of his team, which is probably first and foremost. I think that's what our team is going to feel with Keegan. I think all these guys are going to be have a lot of confidence. I think Keegan's personality is infectious. I think the players are going to really gravitate to him, lean on him. He's going to be the dominant voice in that room, and I think that's a plus for us. The Europeans, I think, are going to do that with Luke.
Lanny, when I look back over Ryder Cup over the last 30-odd years, when I think of the captains who were most obviously pained by defeat, I think of you and I think of Hal Sutton. When you look back on 95, do you look back and say, well, I should have done this differently or I made a mistake here? How do you process it?
Well, I don't know that I could have done a whole lot differently, Eamon. I also had a three-point lead with 11 matches to play and singles. So, honestly, we had done a lot of things right, leading up to the singles matches. And the way the singles lined up, the guys were in pretty good shape. I had sent Lehman off first. He beat Ballesteros in the first match. Corey Pavin beat Bernhard Langer. So you're talking, their two main guys went down. Mickelson won at the end. Maybe I could have played some other guys more matches. I did make a very concerted effort to get everybody involved in the matches, playing at least two, three times. Maybe I tried to be too generous with that. But we had a very well-balanced team. I had a couple guys that didn't play up to their capabilities, but that happens in every Ryder Cup. There'll be guys that are going to leave at Bethpage disappointed in the way they played, and just part of it is golf.
Lanny, you hit some of the most consequential shots in the history of the Ryder Cup, including 1983. I was always curious, did you prepare differently for a Ryder Cup than you would a major championship or a stroke play event? How did you get the knife so sharp time after time after time in the Ryder Cup in particular?
Well, I think we just try to keep playing. I was lucky. I played a lot of match play as an amateur, so I had a lot of experience with that, even though when I won the U.S. Amateur, it was medal play. But I won the Western and won a bunch of other match play events, tournaments, played the North-South every year. Our state amateur was at match play. I played two Walker Cups, so I had an idea of what was going to happen with Ryder Cup. So I had played enough match play to, know how to take it and play with it. I enjoy it. I just enjoy anything that was different in golf. You know, when you play the tour, you're playing 72 holes week in, week out, and it gets a little monotonous. So when we have a team event or a Ryder Cup, something that's different, I've now got, in my mind, the best players in the world on my side. I like that. I got to play with Raymond Floyd as my partner, Corey Pavin as my partner, Payne Stewart. I mean, going down the line, just some guys that could really, really play, and that we're great friends and have remained great friends.
There seems to be an assumption that the crowd will be the 13th man for the American team next week at Bethpage, Lanny, which kind of underestimates how many Europeans actually live in the tri-state area here as well. Do you have any concerns that the crowd could actually cross the line in terms of behavior?
Well, I hope not. I don't think they ever have. I think most parts they've been rowdy. I mean, the crowds have always been rowdy. I always find it very interesting that we never say a word about what happens to us when we're playing in Europe. I know I've been on the first tee as far back as 1985, been introduced and had the entire grandstands boo me. You know, you showed a picture earlier in the day of a shot I'm chipping in at 18, playing with Payne Stewart as my partner in an alternate shot match, and there must be five, six people deep behind the green. Everybody's got their arms folded, nobody applauding my eagle chip going in. They wanted it to miss. So, I mean, we got the same treatment over there. We just never complained about it. Sometimes I think the Europeans are just a bunch of wusses and can't handle the heat.
Landy, what are you most looking forward to next week? We just had Todd and Rex on, and we've kind of all agreed that there's just so many unknowns when you have these two great teams, Rory playing great, Scotty playing great, the New York metropolitan area. What are you most looking forward to?
I think the matches, the competition, I'm just excited to see a great set of matches. I think, you know, what we've seen lately is they haven't been all that close. I'd like to see a close Ryder Cup. I think it's going to happen. I think the teams are very, very evenly matched with, you know, all the way down the line. Seems like I like the form our guys are in. They all seem to play very, very well last week. I think they're motivated. I know that we were really, really motivated in 89 over there, and we tied. And then we came back to Kiowa and won in 91, and we were extremely motivated. And I think that's a big part of it. You know, it's do you want to win or do you not want to lose? And that's the choice some of the guys have to make.
After that European victory, the first one in 28 years back in 1985, Lanny, there seemed to be a period over the next 15, 20 years where it didn't really matter who was the home team and who was the away team. That there were tight matches, but they could flip either way. We haven't had an away team victory since 2012. Do you think there's any particular reason for that?
No, I don't know, Eamon. I think one of the things that happened, though, you know, when I played, I played four Ryder Cups, I think, in Europe. And we played Lytham St. Anne's in 77. Every other time we played the Belfry. So, you know, the players knew the Belfry when we went back in 89 and then 93, was familiar with it. It was not anything special. It wasn't a links course. It, you know, something we hadn't played. And I think coming over here, there are enough Europeans playing over here in our major champ, you know, in the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship. And essentially any Ryder Cup course over here is going to be set up like a U.S. Open or PGA Championship. So they already pretty much know what to expect when they get here. I don't think there are going to be any big surprises at Bethpage for the Europeans.
Well, you can't write the history of the Ryder Cup without the name Lanny Watkins, which is why we brought you on. We appreciate it, buddy. Thanks, Lanny.
Nice being with you guys. Have a good week.
Well, a reminder that live from the Ryder Cup gets the week started on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern time on Golf Channel.